This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, that song always gets me fired up. Hour number three, Bennett Woods on a Tuesday. Best wishes to our colleague Stephen Woods, who is home with the coronavirus. Yeah, it's still out there. It's
still a thing.
Fortunately, a mild case. He says he's feeling all right. Hopefully, he will be back soon. I think it caught him very off guard that that's what he had. He was expecting a different sort of diagnosis, maybe strep throat again.
Strep throat, and I think if this was 3 years ago, he's probably thinking, "Oh my God, I got COVID." Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that was the one of the telltale signs was tickly throat.
Yeah.
And, still a thing. Be safe, everybody. Wash your hands.
He is vaccinated, though. That does help keep the symptoms more mild, and hopefully he'll be fine and back soon. But until then, you are stuck with Paul Reindl and myself, Ben Higgins. We got a good second half of the program coming up at 8:35. It is a Jesse Agler Tuesday. We will be joined by the voice of the Padres, talk about the weekend that was against the Yankees and yesterday's game against the Marlins. Give them an incorporator word for tonight, which, by the way, is the belt bag giveaway. And just got the preview in here. Adam brought in the belt bags with the City Connect colors, the one that Mudd has been wearing either as a fanny pack or shoulder strap.
Over the shoulder, yeah.
Yeah, works either way. Good to carry, I think this is good for in the ballpark as well, right? It's a small enough size that you can put your wallet or keys or stuff in these bags and take them even into the ballpark, which is perfect. So that's for tonight's game against the Miami Marlins. Also brought in my first look in person at one of the Joe Musgrove basketball jerseys. That's going to be during the next home stand in early June, on June 11th. First 40,000 fans in attendance will take home a Joe Musgrove basketball jersey presented by Motorola. In fact, they come in, I like this, they come in five different sizes.
Perfect.
First come, first serve. It's not like one size fits all, which is what happens with so many giveaways. And they'd be too small for me, they'd be too big for my kids, and doesn't even matter. But with five different sizes, should fit most Padres fans if you get there early enough and get your choice of what you want. Tickets are available, and you can check out more at padres.com/giveaways. I don't know.
Will you put your jersey on?
Did I put it on?
Are you going to?
I'm not going to. Adam said I had to give it back to him.
Oh.
Yes. Oh, I got a Xander Bogaerts bobblehead as well. He's been talking about that one. That is during the Diamondback series on June 6th, presented by Coca-Cola.
It's always tough to have a bobblehead when you're injured, for a player that gets
it's better.
Hurt.
I mean, it's better than having a bobblehead for a player you've already traded to another team, which has happened more than once in Major League Baseball, where a team does bobblehead giveaways. I mean, there's a Ha-Sung Kim bobblehead later in this season.
Mm.
No one's 100% sure that Ha-Sung Kim will be around. What do you think? Still here after the trading deadline, considering he's going into free agency? He's probably, it's probably not a high priority for the Padres to re-sign in the offseason at this point, to be honest with you.
Yeah, unfortunately.
But he also, I mean, they need him right now, especially with Bogaerts hurt.
Right.
They're going to need his defense out there, and there's no guarantee that Xander's going to be back anytime around the trading deadline either. So I don't know that you can trade Ha-Sung Kim. And if he starts hitting, he might be a critical player for you down the stretch for a team that is currently very much in a playoff race and, holding a wild card spot right now.
We talked about it a lot during the offseason. Are they going to trade Ha-Sung Kim? Are they going to trade Ha-Sung Kim? You can't trade Ha-Sung Kim. Well, his value was at its absolute peak in the offseason, and his value has gone down, I think, a little bit, trade value.
A lot bit, actually.
Yeah.
A lot bit.
I mean, he's still going to get a nice payday. Somebody will sign him when he's a free agent.
He is he's a valuable player. I mean, defensively, certainly. I don't think you can guarantee, though, offensive production from Ha-Sung Kim. He's been, even in his better seasons, been a little hot and cold, hit or miss, get tired out at the end of the season, even last year, did not have a good September. Obviously his first year struggled to adjust to pitching, and now he's kind of slumping again. So You cannot guarantee that he'll ever be that player that was kind of in the MVP, at least top 10 voting right. conversation last year for much of the season. I don't know that that's the real Ha-Sung Kim. I'm not expecting, you know, $200 million anywhere out there for Ha-Sung Kim. No. I don't know. Do you think he gets nine figures? Does he get over $100 million? I would have before the season now, and I'm not so sure.
I was thinking, oh, he's going somewhere for, you know, $150 million.
I mean, Jungho Lee got over $100 million, not having played a day of Major right. League Baseball. You know Ha-Sung Kim's got value there, which makes me think, well, of course he's going to get a nine-figure contract in the offseason. But then again, I don't know that I'd be the one that wanted to pay him nine figures.
Yeah, I mean, you have so many infielders that it just, we talked about it in the offseason. If you sign Kim to, like, let's call it a six-year extension, then you're really locked in. Like, your entire infield is just locked down for the duration of that contract and Jake's contract, at least.
You have to have some flexibility. Whether it's AJ Preller or someone else who's the general manager going forward, you can't just handcuff them to, like, seven of the nine players in the field and go, all right, here's your team. Go ahead and, well, you can't trade. No, they all have no trade clauses. Right. No, they're all signed for 8 years. What's the point of even having a general manager at that point? Just to make, you know, one or two bullpen moves every year? I mean, you're not even giving anyone a shot if you just sign everybody to long-term contracts.
And we have a rise for this season and next year?
Correct. He's also someone that will be at least talked about on the trade market in the offseason.
Yeah, in the offseason. I don't think he's going anywhere this year, but
they'll talk about a contract extension. They will also talk about a trade because both of those things make some sense.
But if you're talking about infielders on the Padres roster currently who will be a free agent soon, which one do you want to sign? I'm going with Luis Arraez right now. And ended the 7 o'clock hour talking about how the month of June can be critical for the 2024 Padres season because they've gotten through a pretty tough part of their schedule. They're one game above 500. They are playing the likes of the Royals, the Angels, the A's, the Mets. Like, there are some very winnable games coming up in June. And if the Padres go one way, I could see them trading a Kim to acquire somebody that they think is going to push them over the edge. I can see them also keeping Kim because they're in the hunt. They want to keep everybody. And if they go the other direction and drop a bunch of those series that they should win in June and things kind of start to spiral, then it's anybody's guess. And Kim may not be the only one that gets tricked.
Yeah, it's funny. You see winnable games. Other people see losable games. They're games you should win, but they are losable.
I mean, every game's losable.
Well, and every game's winnable as well. So, you know, I'd look at the weekend series against the Yankees and go, yeah, those are winnable games. Probably not going to win them, but they're winnable games.
At least they have the Royals and the Angels on the road. You know, the Mets on the road. Like, you got to win those games.
Now, the Royals are a good team. I mean, let's not sell the Royals short. It's not like the Padres are heading to the old Royals last place type club. That's a playoff looking squad right now that you go into Kansas City this coming weekend. So that road trip starts with
will
a
be
tough
a big
one.
Series.
Yeah, that'll
get
be
the A's at home.
You don't want to let the Diamondbacks get going. They still have never totally locked in after their World Series appearance last year. The Giants, we talked about it earlier, they've kind of gotten going. Will they be able to sustain it? They still have Robbie Ray potentially later in the season joining their starting rotation. You can't imagine Blake Snell is going to pitch as poorly as he has the first five starts. He'll have a good run in him at some point this year. That seems almost inevitable.
August.
So, you know, Giants are definitely dangerous. You hope that the Mets are like, nah, it's not our year. We're still in full rebuild mode, and you can take advantage of a team like that. But there's still plenty of teams that are definitely not out of it, especially in the National League playoff chase. I mean, even like the Pirates and the Nationals and the Cardinals, who started out so poorly, they climbed back to close to 500. They're only two games above 500, only, what, game and a half behind the Padres and for a playoff spot. So there are tons of teams that still feel like they are very much in contention at this point in the season. The only ones that really aren't are the Colorado Rockies, who you have struggled against, and the Miami Marlins, who are currently at Petco Park right now, and you were able to win the first game of that series yesterday. We'll see how they do tonight in game two of the series. Did go over the weekend Not that anyone's going to care at all. But I went to check out, because of course I did, the NCAA Golf Championships that are going on right now at La Costa. Just, I guess, part of my dream, of course, I played college golf on a Division III level. And I'll have to say, it struck me when I was there. I assume that they probably did have like some sort of NCAA Division III championship as well when I played. It was so far out of the realm of possibility that our team could even make it. I can honestly say that in 4 years, the thought never even crossed my mind of our team advancing to like the NCAA championships. That's how bad my college golf team was. That, like, I mean, you don't even start the year with a dream. Well, everything goes right, and you know everyone plays up to their capabilities, and we win the league, and we get an invitation to national. Not once in 4 years did that thought even like across my mind that it exists. But these kids, they hit the ball so far. I mean, I walked around the course just to see some of them, and they had these tees back like 520 yard par fours into the wind. They're hitting like 350 out there. I can't even see where the ball is landing. They're hitting the ball so far, which was kind of cool that we're having a major NCAA event right now in our backyard up in North County at La Costa, where they redid the whole course. It looks fantastic, really spectacular. So,
totally.
Yeah, I know. No one cares about my golf exploits over the weekend, but I want to take a timeout. When we come back, we talked about it earlier, but we need to do the official Benin Woods, shout out to his family. And I want to share the one Bill Walton story that I learned yesterday that I thought was the absolute best thing I saw yesterday about Bill. And we'll do that when we come back after a check of traffic with Benin Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Probably should have played some Grateful Dead, actually, coming into this segment, but that's okay. Welcome back. It is Ben and Paul today. Just got a text from Woods, says he's feeling a little bit better, so that's a good sign this morning, and hopefully he is back soon, sooner rather than later. But even Woodsy had some interactions with Bill Walton over the last, 10-plus years since he arrived in San Diego. I remember distinctly we were emceeing the big Padres dinner at Petco Park a few years ago out on the field. And Bill was one of the guests in attendance, but he wasn't scheduled to be one of the speakers. And they wanted to make sure they ran a tight ship. So we were given specific instructions. Do not, under any circumstances,
whatever you do,
Bill Walton, take the microphone. Because if you do, we will be here all night. Do not let that man start talking, because you can never get him to stop. And it's a loving remembrance of Bill Walton, who, of course, passed away yesterday at the age of 71. And I saw a lot of people talking about Bill, obviously, yesterday, especially people who knew him well. And clearly, we'll talk to Jim Brogan in our 9 o'clock hour. He was a teammate of Bill's on the San Diego Clippers in the early 1980s. But more recently, when Bill just turned into the full hippie, dippy Bill Walton, especially on ESPN's Pac-12 broadcast, his broadcast partner for most of those games was Dave Pasch. So Dave Pasch was someone who spoke a lot yesterday on ESPN about Bill Walton. He was on early in the day. He was on with Scott Van Pelt later at night. And what really struck me is, and this felt very odd, that in many ways, Bill Walton was very much like Woods is for me. Because with Dave Pasch, Dave said, I went to Syracuse. I was like a professionally trained play-by-play broadcaster, like old school. You know, you do everything a certain way, and you know it's buttoned up and it's proper. And you know, I took it very seriously.
Not
I was
with Bill there.
I was a little bit of a, you know, kind of a starched shirt, and you know, it was hard for me to let loose. But then I started working with Bill Walton, and he kind of opened up this new personality that I didn't know that I had, and allowed me to be playful during these games and not take everything so seriously. And I thought, huh, that sounds kind of familiar.
It's a really, really good connection that I did not put together.
And I thought, I am Dave Pasch, and Woods is kind of Bill Walton when it comes to sports talk. Woods doesn't do sports talk the way everybody else has done sports talk. He does it more like Bill Walton called basketball games.
Woods would have flunked and sports talk radio
at
school.
At Syracuse, he never would have gotten through sports talk radio school. He did it. He does it his own way, just like Bill did games his own way. And somehow Bill was able to be kooky and crazy, yet he knew his basketball, and he had great points. And just like Woods does, he knows his baseball, he knows his stuff, he even knows basketball, even though he'll never totally admit it. He can watch it and make some good points. He knows his football, but he does it his own way, and he makes me better as well, just like Bill has made Dave better and more entertaining as a broadcaster. And I thought, huh, I would have never put that connection together. Bill Walton and Stephen Woods right there. But I thought that was very interesting. But the story that stuck with me the most yesterday about the kind of person that Bill Walton was, and he really was a good person. I know everyone, after they pass away, we all say what good people they were. And it's often true. I mean, I think most people are mostly good at heart. But Bill truly was someone who cared and loved people. And just about everybody. It didn't really matter who you are. And this story was about Mike Breen, the basketball broadcaster, national basketball broadcaster.
Bang! 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 Breen.
So he worked with Bill just a couple of years in the NBA on NBC long ago. And in recent years, Mike Breen was quoted as saying, "I'll fight anybody to the death who says anything bad about Bill Walton." And here's the reason why. He says, "I've told this story maybe 20 times, and 18 of them wind up crying." He says, "My dad, John Breen, had started exhibiting signs of Parkinson's in the late 20-aughts, and by 2008 started to withdraw, not wanting to ask for help or be seen as weak." And I think that's very common with people who are experiencing severe debilitating illnesses. And Mike Breen says, "My brother called me and said, 'Did you know the USS Midway is stationed in San Diego?' So their dad had served on the Midway, but hadn't seen it since his discharge in 1955. So they decided to go see it, which, of course, now the USS Midway Museum here in San Diego, and while the father could still travel. So Breen called Bill Walton, who, of course, lives here, to get some hotel recommendations. And Breen says, Bill says, 'Oh, that's great, but you're not staying at a hotel. You're staying at my house.' Breen says, making his voice sound oafy and generous like a cartoon bear. I said, 'Bill, that's so nice of you. I think my dad would be a little embarrassed.' And like, dad's there, and he goes, 'No, no, that's great.' So the Breens end up going and staying with the Waltons for the entire 3 days. They planned to buy tickets to the USS Midway, but when they got here, Walton had already called ahead formed the museum and said they'd be bringing along one of the heroes that served on the ship. So the Midway commander greeted them personally. And then Bill came with them on the tour, Breen says, and walked every step of the way. The knees, the back, a 7-footer does not belong anywhere near an aircraft carrier, but he didn't miss a second of it. They stayed for 3 days, and for 3 days, Breen says, he did not leave my father's side. And when we left, Bill wasn't my friend. Bill was his friend. And it was really like three of the best days in his life in those last couple of years. And he did pass away, but that story remains important to Breen, and his mom who still lives in the same house. They get a big picture of Bill Walton and Mike Breen and his dad visiting the USS Midway still in their house and in the teepee in Bill Walton's backyard, which is still, yes, he does actually still have a teepee there in his backyard in his house by Balboa Park. But that was the story to me that stuck with me the most, that Bill Walton, you know, he just kind of cared about everybody and wanted to touch some lives and see what he could do in his own kind of weird way to make everybody a little bit happier. So, as we do, Paulie, if you would fire it up in Ben and Wood's tradition.
And I really hope we can see more unity and more peace when already things are so difficult. So, shout out to his family.
That one definitely hurts a little bit more than the usual one. Just as I said earlier, you could say, call it the Mount Rushmore of San Diego athletes, but you can't start any conversation about the greats that have come out of San Diego without talking about Bill Walton, who this is something I didn't know yesterday either. When Bill was like 12, 13, wasn't tall at all. He played guard. He was actually, they showed a picture like of his freshman, I think, team or JV team at Helix. He was one of the shorter guys. That's not Bill Walton. Everybody, all those other kids are taller than. How could that be Bill Walton? He grew 6 inches between his sophomore and junior years, and eventually filled into that 6'11" frame that ended up being the signature of Bill Walton. And while he's remembered for many things as a basketball player, his signature game was probably the 1973. Championship against Memphis State in the NCAA tournament. 21 of 22 from the field, 44 points.
Good God.
In that game for Bill Walton as they won a second straight title at UCLA. And I was watching some of the highlights as well. You see it today in a couple of the big men like Jokic, but Bill Walton was such a great passer. He was doing like Jokic style passes, like not looking, like feeding it out to the cutters, you know, well before what you would think is like his time in modern basketball. He'd fit in very well today with some of the big men. He didn't dribble the ball the way, you know, some of the big guys do, like Doncic and Jokic now can, like a point guard, but otherwise he would go down the court, and as he's running down, he would call the plays with the point guard like trailing behind them. But Bill was the one who actually understood the game, saw what was happening. Obviously he learned it, you know, from John Wooden at UCLA, who he idolized. And I mean, yeah, I did not realize that he was kind of a short kid and was not a sports family. His dad was a music teacher, and his mom was a librarian. They knew nothing about sports at all, but they ended up with this giant kid who wanted to play some basketball. He had a stutter. He was almost 30 years old, and of course overcame it and became not just a broadcaster, but a guy who never stopped talking at all. Maybe it's because he didn't talk for his first 30 years, but the last 40 years he wanted to make up for time and just constantly talk the entire time. But
Don and Tony talked about it a little bit in the broadcast yesterday, how he was such a San Diego icon that, not in the sense that we all knew who he was, but like we all felt like, and for a lot of people listening, you've probably met Bill Walton or you saw him riding his bike, you ran into him or something, like you had that accessibility to him because he was always just out and about in the community. He loved San Diego.
And it was always easy to spot him as well. He didn't hide, Dave Pasha. He didn't wear hats or anything like
that. Not that you could really hide,
but red hair, tie-dye t-shirt, 6'11". There's really no way he could get around it. He knew he was going to be approached, so he'd stay after games for like an hour and just he'd sign autographs and just be himself.
Dave Pasha, who you mentioned earlier, was the one that called those Pac-12 games. Pac-12, RIP, by the way.
Yeah.
Had their last sporting event.
Bill Walton did not want to live in a world that did not have the Pac-12 in it, apparently.
But Dave Pasch has been posting on social media a ton of memories and tributes to Bill Walton all morning long. And the one that got me was he posted four screenshots of text messages. And he said, Bill would text me during games that I was broadcasting and pretend he didn't know I was doing it, but would ask if I was watching. And there's a text from Bill Walton that says, I hope you're watching the Knicks-Cavs game. Superb. Check it out. There's still time. Hopefully the announcer will set the scene for you. Enjoy. BW. There was another one. Are you watching this masterpiece, UCLA UW on ESPN? No idea who's calling the game, but the guy's stealing your lines. Those guys just look like they had so much fun. And yeah, I feel for Dave Pasch and anybody that knew Bill Walton.
Maybe I'll try that with our next guest tonight. Jesse, you should be. Oh, are you watching this Padres game? It's amazing. It's fantastic. Are you checking this out? Padres Marlins. You got to get to the radio right now. It's terrific. That is our next guest. Jesse Agler is going to join us. We got an incorporator coming up as well. Talk some Padres baseball with the voice of the Padres. When we return, Ben and Paul. Rest in peace, Bill Walton. On San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. Paul, you're a fairly tall guy as well, like me. What, 6'3"?
Yep, 6'3".
Do you remember growing pains, like when you were younger? Like
yes.
Yes, I do too. And people are pointing out in the chat, because I mentioned that they said that Bill Walton grew 6 inches, like the summer between his sophomore and junior years of high school. My God, how painful that must have been to be growing at that rate. That fast, like every single day, your body must have felt like it was just like aching from the inside out to grow that much.
Yeah, I grew quickly, but not like six inches in a year.
No one grows like that.
I grew quickly where like my joints just like stretched out. Like I used to catch in Little League all the time, like full games. I loved catching. And then I just hit a point where I grew and my knees were they just got so weak. And the doctor said, yeah, you grew a little too fast and like joints, the tendons in your knee just kind of stretched out, and that's why you have weak knees. I'm like, okay, no more catching for me, but I can't even imagine 6 inches in a year.
I want to ask our next guest how he would have handled calling a game with Bill Walton. 7-3 The Fan is brought to you by Express Employment Professionals. If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is your one connection for a summer job in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com. Jesse Agler standing by right after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. Now, I know Jesse Agler has done some other sports, basketball, football, broadcasting in the past. I was assuming that he never did a game with Bill Walton, but I guess I don't know that for sure. Good morning, Jesse. You never called a game with Bill, did you?
No, I didn't, but it would have been a heck of an experience. But, you know, I'm really close with a couple of guys who worked with him a lot. Roxy Bernstein in particular, Pac-12, they've done a ton of games together over the years. Roxy and I go back, oh man, almost 20 years now. And Jason Benetti has become a very good friend in the industry also. And he's famously worked with Bill on multiple occasions. So I've talked to both of them about it in the past. And, I think, you know, if I had ever had the honor, it would have been a wonderful lesson in like letting go of control. Because you're not going to have any. You know, as a play-by-play guy, right, like you sort of consider yourself a point guard for broadcast, and, you know, you're trying to get from A to B, and, you know, you have certain information or stats or stories that you want to pass along. You obviously want to explain and describe what's happening in the game. And I think if you're working with Bill, you just sort of have to let go of all of that and just kind of get on for the ride. And, you know, it's something of a, I don't know, like a psychedelic roller coaster. What a beautiful, beautiful human being. You know, like you guys, I was honored to meet him a couple of times around town at Petco and at different, you know, community events. And, you know, I think I said on the radio yesterday, like, every human is by definition unique. But I think Bill, you know, maybe unique with a capital U. What an incredible person.
But you have worked with Mutt Grant, which has got to be somewhat similar.
Yeah, no, they're the Venn diagram definitely exists. You know? All right. I heard you guys a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
Real quick with Bill, you know, there was a really, really good special, and I can't remember what outlet it was on. It might have been locally produced. It might have been nationally. I don't remember. Kind of like him going back to his childhood home here and you know, reminiscing. And this was fairly recently about
luckiest guy in the world. 30 for 30. Yeah. That was great. Yeah.
It was a 30 for 30. Okay. Yeah. It was outstanding. And, you know, it was a really good reminder that, like, you know, this is a person who has had some very, very serious challenges in their life. And there's probably not been a lot of days in the last 50 years in which he was physically comfortable, you know, to say anything of feeling great. And, you know, when you contrast that with his outlook on life and his personality and what he gave out to the world, you know, there's a really good lesson in there for all of us. You know, I mean, you wake up with a stiff neck and it can ruin your whole day, right? And like, then you think about Bill Walton and what he dealt with and how he was outward to the rest of humanity. I think, you know, we'd all be a little bit better off if we remembered that a bit more frequently.
Well said, Jesse. Jesse Agler, voice of the Padres, is with us. And here we are, one third of the way through the Major League Baseball season. And Memorial Day is a day even people inside baseball kind of circle as a spot to take stock in the team. And we were talking about it earlier where the Padres stand now, a game above 500 against a pretty tough schedule. Give us your just kind of overall thoughts on the first third of the schedule here, Jesse.
I think it feels to me a little bit like treading water in, you know, fairly choppy seas. And I think when you step back and consider what they haven't gotten out of their biggest superstar types, that's okay. You know, I think they're right in the thick of it, you know, playoff wise. You know, they're not out of anything by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, they're very much in it. And they have not gotten what they have expected to get out of, you know, particularly Manny and Fernando. And so credit to Profar and Cronenworth and Merrill and everybody else who has contributed, obviously the pitching staff as well, to kind of keep them in the position, you know, that they're in. You know, my thought and hope would be, yeah, at some point, of course, you know, Manny and Fernando are going to get going in the way that we would expect. And that's when you hope, you know, that they're able to rip off 8 out of 10. You know, or 10 out of 13 in the win column, something like that. Now, all of a sudden, instead of sort of bobbing up and down, you know, two games under 500, two games over 500, maybe you're bobbing more in the 9 games over, you know, 7 games over type of waters. And so I think, you know, has it been a best case scenario? Obviously not, you know, when you look at those numbers and you look at the standings. But I do think all things considered, they're in a pretty good spot. As you said, Memorial Day is one of those markers on the calendar. It's, you know, about a third of the way through. There is an awful lot of baseball left to be played. They're in the thick of it, and I expect them to continue to be in the thick of it at worst, you know, the rest of the way.
The 2024 San Diego Padres, they haven't drowned. That's our slogan going forward. Jesse, one of the things I love about baseball are the unexpected stories, the ones even people inside the organization didn't see coming. And I think Jeremiah Estrada has been one of those guys. You know, spring training, I don't really remember him much. I know that they saw some things that they liked in him from the Chicago Cubs. But even if A.J. Preller is being honest, I can't imagine anyone expected to see what they've gotten out of Jeremiah Estrada. Just kind of thoughts and what you've learned about Jeremiah Estrada over these past few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of the great stories of the season so far. And the neat thing is, you know, I mean, in this age of analytics, it's real. Like, you know, you can say, now I'm not suggesting he's going to literally strike out every guy forever as he's been doing, but like, you know, the metrics on his fastball in particular, you know, this is a very real pitch. And so, you know, it's not a smoke and mirror situation, as is sometimes the case, right? You know, we've all seen the random reliever come up out of nowhere and have a really good few weeks. And then, you know, as time goes on, it goes away. I would not expect that to be the case with Jeremiah Estrada based on what he's able to do. We saw him a lot, you know, in spring training. And it was like, all right, you know, I can see why they like him, but it's also spring training and it's a little wonky. And, you know, what can I see from my perch in Peoria other than he throws really hard? You know, I mean, I knew he had some walk issues, you know, in the Cubs organization. So you were sort of always cognizant of that and kind of waiting to see if that was going to pop up. And, you know, all right, he goes down to AAA after the first couple of days of the season. And quite frankly, you don't think too much of him. You know, my main memories of him from spring training where he throws hard and he was kind of like a funny guy. Like he had a great personality. And you always appreciate when that's the case. And then, you know, since coming back up, I'll continue to circle the game at Wrigley in which he came in. And it was sort of like the first time we saw him in a higher leverage situation. And it didn't go perfectly for him. He had, you know, a couple of guys on base. He didn't finish the inning, but he didn't implode. You know, it wasn't like a disaster or anything like that. And I remember Tony and I kind of looking at each other like, huh, you know, okay, they're going to give him a little bit of an opportunity here. And then Mike Shildt made a comment the next day when he was asked about it, you know, sort of like, hey, he's a former Cub. He came up through their system. You know, you put him out in kind of a high leverage moment there. you know, you're never quite sure how somebody's going to respond in that situation. And Mike kind of smirked a little bit, and he was like, yeah, it's kind of fun to see how they respond to something like that. And obviously the Padres liked something they saw that night in Chicago, because pretty much the next time he came out was a very high leverage situation, and he shut it down. And it's so neat to me to sort of see that evolution take place. And it's something, you know, to use one of Mike Schilt's words, that they are very, very intentional about. You know, this is a coaching staff and a front office. When it comes to stuff like this, they are not throwing it against the wall and seeing what sticks. They have very specific ideas about how they want to do things. And if you're paying super close attention, which of course is my job, not anybody else's, but like if you're paying super close attention, you can kind of sometimes see these things coming. And I find that just wonderfully fascinating. And obviously when it works out, you know, fulfilling as well. But it's been a great story. You know, the fact that there's like a fairly local tie-in, you know, he's from Palm Desert, and to be able to see him having this kind of success is wonderful. And it's such a great reminder too for all of us that, you know, the bullpen thing is just like inexplicable year to year. You just never know, you know, at the start of a season what your bullpen is going to end up looking like. And obviously there will continue to be changes amongst the relievers as time goes on, but he's been wonderful as of late. Obviously struck out the last 10.
Jesse, a lot made of the return of Juan Soto over the weekend, and you know, he hits the home run. Aaron Judge, red hot as well. Padres did get that last one. And the reaction to Juan Soto's return, and for me, I think it's kind of a case of envy, you know, pure and simple. Padres fans want what the Yankees have right now, a team that's, you know, in first place and dominating with huge stars that they never totally got to enjoy with Juan Soto. And it wasn't Juan Soto's fault, but he was kind of the easy target for it. And so I understood that feeling when he came back, that it wasn't necessarily the most pleasant feeling for Padres fans. What were your thoughts on Juan Soto's return?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of that. There's probably also a little bit of, as Juan himself said, you know, he did not perform up to his level as a Padre. Now, last year, when all was said and done, you look back at the numbers, he was their best offensive player, and he put up some pretty serious numbers a year ago. But they weren't necessarily the Juan Soto numbers that you dreamed of when that trade was made, and I think he was aware of that. You know, Juan's a smart guy. He knows baseball very, very well. He understands expectations. He understands fans. And he understands, you know, sort of, I think, the realities that go along with all of that. So he was asked before the first game, you know, what he was expecting. And he went out of his way to bring that up, you know, that, hey, I wasn't at my best over the long haul as a Padre. Now, obviously, look, he provided some incredible moments. He's a generational talent. And I think we were all sort of.
Paul, you're a fairly tall guy as well, like me. What, 6'3"?
Yep, 6'3".
Do you remember growing pains, like when you were younger? Like,
yes.
Yes, I do too. And people are pointing out in the chat, because I mentioned that they said that Bill Walton grew 6 inches like the summer between his sophomore and junior years of high school. My God, how painful that must have been to be growing at that rate, that fast, like every single day. Your body must have felt like it was just like aching from the inside out to grow that
much. Yeah, I grew quickly, but not like six inches in a year.
No one grows like that.
I grew quickly where, like, my joints just, like, stretched out. Like, I used to catch in Little League all the time. Like, full games, I loved catching. And then I just hit a point where I grew, and my knees were, they just got so weak. And the doctor said, yeah, you grew a little too fast, and, like joints, the tendons in your knee just kind of stretched out, and that's why you have weak knees. I'm like, okay, no more catching for me. But I can't even imagine 6 inches in a year.
I want to ask our next guest how he would have handled calling a game with Bill Walton. 73 The Fan is brought to you by Express Employment Professionals. If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is your one connection for a summer job in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com. Jesse Agler standing by right after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. Now, I know Jesse Agler has done some other sports, basketball, football broadcasting in the past. I was assuming that he never did a game with Bill Walton, but I guess I don't know that for sure. Good morning, Jesse. You never called a game with Bill, did you?
No, I didn't, but it would have been a heck of an experience. But, you know, I'm really close with a couple of guys who worked with him a lot. Roxy Bernstein in particular, Pac-12, they've done a ton of games together over the years. Roxy and I go back, oh man, almost 20 years now. And Jason Benetti has become a very good friend in the industry also. And he's famously worked with Bill on multiple occasions. So I've talked to both of them about it in the past. And I think, you know, if I had ever had the honor, it would have been a wonderful lesson in, like, letting go of control, because you're not going to have any. You know, as a play-by-play guy, right, like, you sort of consider yourself a point guard,
yeah,
for broadcast, and, you know, you're trying to get from A to B, and, you know, you have certain information or stats or stories that you want to pass along. You obviously want to explain and describe what's happening in the game. And I think if you're working with Bill, you just sort of have to let go of all of that and just kind of get on for the ride. And, you know, it's something of a, I don't know, like a psychedelic roller coaster. What a beautiful, beautiful human being. You know, like you guys, I was honored to meet him a couple of times around town at Petco and at different, you know, community events. And, you know, I think I said on the radio yesterday, like, every human is by definition unique. But I think Bill, you know, maybe unique with a capital U. What an incredible person.
But you have worked with Mutt Grant, which has got to be somewhat similar.
Yeah, no, they're the Venn diagram definitely exists. You know?
All right.
I heard you guys a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
Real quick with Bill, you know, there was a really, really good special. And I can't remember what outlet it was on. It might have been locally produced. It might have been nationally. I don't remember. Kind of like him going back to his childhood home here. And you know, reminiscing, and this was fairly recently about
luckiest guy in the world, 30 for 30.
Yeah.
That was great. Yeah.
It was a 30 for 30. Okay. Yeah. It was outstanding. And, you know, it was a really good reminder that, like, you know, this is a person who has had some very, very serious challenges in their life. And there's probably not been a lot of days in the last 50 years in which he was physically comfortable, you know, to say anything of feeling great. And, you know, when you contrast that with his outlook on life, and his personality and what he gave out to the world, you know, there's a really good lesson in there for all of us. You know, I mean, you wake up with a stiff neck and it can ruin your whole day, right? And, like, then you think about Bill Walton and what he dealt with and how he was outward to the rest of humanity. I think, you know, we'd all be a little bit better off if we remembered that a bit more frequently.
Well said, Jesse. Jesse Agler, voice of the Padres, is with us. And here we are, one third of the way through the Major League Baseball season. And Memorial Day is a day even people inside baseball kind of circle as a spot,
yeah,
to take stock in the team. And we were talking about it earlier, where the Padres stand now, a game above 500 against a pretty tough schedule. Give us your just kind of overall thoughts on the first third of the schedule here, Jesse.
I think it feels to me a little bit like treading water in, you know, fairly choppy seas. And I think when you step back and consider what they haven't gotten out of their biggest superstar types, that's okay. You know, I think they're right in the thick of it, you know, playoff wise. You know, they're not out of anything by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, they're very much in it, and they have not gotten what they have expected to get out of, you know, particularly Manny and Fernando. And so credit to Profar and Cronenworth and Merrill and everybody else who has contributed, obviously the pitching staff as well, to kind of keep them in the position, you know, that they're in. You know, my thought and hope would be, yeah, at some point, of course, you know, Manny and Fernando are going to get going in the way that we would expect. And that's when you hope, you know, that they're able to rip off 8 out of 10, you know, or 10 out of 13 in the win column, something like that. Now, all of a sudden, instead of sort of bobbing up and down, you know, two games under 500, two games over 500, maybe you're bobbing more in the 9 games over, you know, 7 games over type of waters. And so I think, you know, has it been a best case scenario? Obviously not, you know, when you look at those numbers and you look at the standings. But I do think, all things considered, they're in a pretty good spot. As you said, Memorial Day is one of those markers on the calendar. It's, you know, about a third of the way through. There is an awful lot of baseball left to be played. They're in the thick of it, and I expect them to continue to be in the thick of it at worst, you know, the rest of the way.
The 2024 San Diego Padres, they haven't drowned. That's our slogan going forward. Jesse, one of the things I love about baseball are the unexpected stories, the ones even people inside the organization didn't see coming. And I think Jeremiah Estrada has been one of those guys. You know, spring training, I don't really remember him much. I know that they saw some things that they liked in him from the Chicago Cubs, but even if AJ Preller is being honest, I can't imagine anyone expected to see what they've gotten out of Jeremiah Estrada. Just kind of thoughts and what you've learned about Jeremiah Estrada over these past few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of the great stories of the season so far. And the neat thing is, you know, I mean, in this age of analytics, it's real. Like, you know, you can say, now I'm not suggesting he's going to literally strike out every guy forever as he's been doing, but, like, you know, the metrics on his fastball in particular you know, this is a very real pitch. And so, you know, it's not a smoke and mirror situation, as is sometimes the case, right? You know, we've all seen the random reliever come up out of nowhere and have a really good few weeks. And then, you know, as time goes on, it goes away. I would not expect that to be the case with Jeremiah Estrada based on what he's able to do. We saw him a lot, you know, in spring training. And it was like, all right, you know, I can see why they like him, but it's also spring training and it's a little wonky. And, you know, what can I see from my perch in Peoria other than he throws really hard? You know, I mean, I knew he had some walk issues, you know, in the Cubs organization. So you were sort of always cognizant of that and kind of waiting to see if that was going to pop up. And, you know, all right, he goes down to AAA after the first couple of days of the season. And quite frankly, you don't think too much of him. You know, my main memories of him from spring training where he throws hard and he was kind of like a funny guy, like he had a great personality. And you always appreciate when that's the case. And then, you know, since coming back up, I'll continue to circle the game at Wrigley in which he came in. And it was sort of like the first time we saw him in a higher leverage situation. And it didn't go perfectly for him. He had, you know, a couple of guys on base. He didn't finish the inning, but he didn't implode. You know, it wasn't like a disaster or anything like that. And I remember Tony and I kind of looking at each other like, huh, you know, okay, they're going to give him a little bit of an opportunity here. And then Mike Shildt made a comment the next day when he was asked about it, you know, sort of like, hey, he's a former Cub. He came up through their system. You know, you put him out in kind of a high leverage moment there. You know, you're never quite sure how somebody's going to respond in that situation. And Mike kind of smirked a little bit, and he was like, yeah, it's kind of fun to see how they respond to something like that. And obviously the Padres liked something they saw that night in Chicago, because pretty much the next time he came out was a very high leverage situation, and he shut it down. And it's so neat to me to sort of see that evolution take place. And it's something, you know, to use one of Mike Shildt's words, that they are very, very intentional about. You know, this is a coaching staff and a front office. When it comes to stuff like this, they are not throwing it against the wall and seeing what sticks. They have very specific ideas about how they want to do things. And if you're paying super close attention, which of course is my job, not anybody else's, but like if you're paying super close attention, you can kind of sometimes see these things coming. And I find that just wonderfully fascinating. And obviously when it works out, you know, fulfilling as well. But it's been a great story. You know, the fact that there's like a fairly local tie-in, you know, he's from Palm Desert, and to be able to see him having this kind of success is wonderful. And it's such a great reminder, too, for all of us that, you know, the bullpen thing is just like inexplicable year to year. You just never know, you know, at the start of a season what your bullpen is going to end up looking like. And obviously there will continue to be changes amongst the relievers as time goes on. But he's been wonderful as of late, obviously struck out the last 10.
Jesse, a lot made of the return of Juan Soto over the weekend, and you know, he hits the home run. Aaron Judge, red hot as well. Padres did get that last one. And the reaction to Juan Soto's return, and for me, I think it's kind of a case of envy, you know, pure and simple. Padres fans want what the Yankees have right now, a team that's, you know, in first place and dominating with huge stars that they never totally got to enjoy with Juan Soto. And it wasn't Juan Soto's fault, but he was kind of the easy target for it. And so I understood that feeling when he came back, that it wasn't necessarily the most pleasant feeling for Padres fans. What were your thoughts on Juan Soto's return?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of that. There's probably also a little bit of, as Juan himself said, you know, he did not perform up to his level as a Padre. Now, last year, when all was said and done, you look back at the numbers, he was their best offensive player, and he put up some pretty serious numbers a year ago. But they weren't necessarily the Juan Soto numbers that you dreamed of when that trade was made, and I think he was aware of that. You know, Juan's a smart guy. He knows baseball very, very well. He understands expectations. He understands fans. And he understands, you know, sort of, I think, the realities that go along with all of that. So he was asked before the first game, you know, what he was expecting. And he went out of his way to bring that up, you know, that, hey, I wasn't at my best over the long haul as a Padre. Now, obviously, look, he provided some incredible moments. He's a generational talent. And I think we were all sort of, you know, better off and fortunate to be able to watch him up close and in person for a year and a half. But the reality was, when that trade was made, you know, I think Padre fans and the Padre organization thought they were getting, you know, peak Juan Soto. And they were also, you know, thinking, hey, we're going to have a couple of really deep playoff runs with this guy. Obviously, he went to the NLCS in 22, but last year the team did not make the postseason. And he, you know, rightly or wrongly, is a little bit the face of that. And as you said, he's the guy that's no longer here. You know, I mean, they're still pulling for Manny and Fernando and everybody else who was around for that, you know, failure last year because they're still on the team. This guy is not. So it's totally understandable that, you know, he would sort of wear the brunt of that because they don't want to boo the guys that are still here. But you do have some frustration maybe about the way 2023 went. And again, I think Juan totally understands that. I think there are, in today's game, very few guys who are bothered by booing or don't understand booing, unless it's sort of a totally weird, random thing. And, you know, I mean, we've seen Manny get booed pretty vociferously the last few years, you know, in L.A., Milwaukee, which goes back to Jesus Aguilar and what was it, 2018 postseason. You know what I mean? And Manny gets it. I can't imagine it's like the most fun thing in the world, but I don't think he really lets it get to him on any sort of human level because these guys are professional athletes and they know that that's part of the deal, and I certainly know Soto thinks that as well.
New attendance record for a three-game series over the weekend. Yeah. Should be another big crowd tonight with a belt bag giveaway against the Marlins. And, of course, it's Tuesday, which means it is time for the Incorporator. And Paulie's got your word fired up. It comes from Tier 1 Courtney. And I think this is going to be the easiest one you've had all season. You just have to find a way to work it in. Here it is, Jesse.
Crepuscular.
Crepuscular. It is having to do or relating to twilight. Crepuscular.
Perfect on a night game.
Like a crepuscular animal is active, you know, during the twilight hours of the day. But for a night game, at home, shadow, who knows? Yeah. I mean, come on. As simple as it gets, you just have to find a way to say crepuscular sometime during the broadcast tonight. Are you with Bob again tonight, or is a Mudback? Or is a...
I'm with Bob the rest of the series, and then Tony and I back together over the weekend in Kansas City, I guess.
How about Tony hitting the home run in Cooperstown over the weekend? That was cool.
I told him yesterday, allegedly. We've all only seen the video of him rounding
second
base.
That's a good point. I mean, it could be a giant con that everyone is just trying to make us think he hit a home run and just stage the entire thing.
I'm going to have Dave Marcus take a video of me, you know, like crossing home plate at Petco, and I'm going to say I hit it over the batter's eye to center field.
Yeah, can't prove it. You didn't.
That's true. That's a good point.
Pretty cool, though. No, that was awesome. That was awesome. I'm thrilled for him.
All right, Jesse. Maybe we'll see you out at the ballpark tonight. I'm coming with my my family celebrating my son's 21st birthday. I got the big group coming out for the game tonight. So hopefully we'll get a win. I know the night home record hasn't exactly been fantastic for the Padres this season, and that is a understatement to say the least.
That's one of the weird ones. Come by, say hi, happy birthday to your son, and enjoy your conversation with Skip.
Thank you very much, Jesse. Take care. Jesse Agler teasing our next guest for us as well.
Love
which
that.
Is doing my job for me. He said say hi to Skip. That's because Skip Schumacher, manager of the Miami Marlins, back in town for the weekend or the week here, is going to join us. Sans Woodsy, he's got to be dying that he's missing this conversation. Not that we can't have Skip on at other times. He's always kind and gives us time. It's just when they're playing the Padres, it's just a relevant conversation this week. So
I'm sure Woods will text Skip his thoughts and
that's
his
good
comments.
He already probably has. He's probably been texting him all weekend.
Probably texting him
yesterday.
Right
now. Might be texting him during our interview as well. He can evaluate our performance, Pauly, coming up next. Ben Woods on 97.3 The Fan. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.